ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. 7th chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu, king of the demons. Text 7 and 8. Tasya tyakta. Tasya tyakta svabhavasya. Grinirmaya vanokashaha. Bhajantam bhajamanasya. Balasyeva sthiratmanaha. Machula binagrivasya. Bhurina rudirenavai. Asrik priyam tarpaishye. Brataram megatavyataha. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has given up his natural tendency of equality towards the demons and demigods. Although he is the Supreme Person, now influenced by Maya, he has assumed the form of boar to please his devotees, the demigods, just as a restless child leans towards someone. I shall therefore sever Lord Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident, and with the profuse blood from his body, I shall please my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. Thus, I too shall be pleased. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. The defect of demonic mentality is expressed in this verse very clearly. Hiranyakashipu thought that Vishnu also becomes partial, like a child whose mind is not steady or resolute. The Lord can change his mind at any time, Hiranyakashipu thought, and therefore his words and activities are like those of a children. Actually, because the demons are ordinary human beings, their minds change. And being materially conditioned, they think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is conditioned also. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanum ashritam. Fools deride me when I descend in a human form. Demons always think of Vishnu, that Vishnu can be killed. Therefore, being absorbed in thoughts of Vishnu's form to kill him, at least they have opportunity to think of Vishnu unfavorably. Although they are not devotees, their thinking of Vishnu is effective, and thus they generally attain Sayujya Mukti. Because the demons consider the Supreme Lord as ordinary living being, they think that they can kill Lord Vishnu as one might kill an ordinary person. Another fact disclosed herein is that demons are very much fond of sucking blood. Indeed, all of them are meat-eaters and blood-suckers. Hiranyakashipu accused the Supreme Lord of having a restless mind like that of a small child who can be induced to do anything if simply offered some cakes or laddus. Indirectly, this indicates the true position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who says in Bhagavad Gita, Patram puspam palam tayam yame bhaktya prayachati, tadaham bhakti upahritam ashnami prayatatmanaham. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, I will accept it. The Lord accepts the offering of devotees because of their transcendental love. Because they are in love with the Supreme Lord, they do not eat anything without offering it first to the Lord. The Lord does not hanker for a small leaf or flower. He has enough food to eat. Indeed, he is feeding all living entities. Nonetheless, because he is very merciful and is Bhakta Vatsala, very favorable to the devotees, he certainly eats whatever they offer him with love and devotion. This quality should not be misjudged to be childish. The highest quality of the Supreme Lord is that he is Bhakta Vatsala. In other words, he is always extremely pleased with his devotees. As for the word Maya, when used in reference to the dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, this word means affection. The action of the Lord to favor his devotees are most not disqualifications, but signs of his natural affection. As for Rudhira, or the blood of Lord Vishnu, since there is no possibility of severing Lord Vishnu's head from his body, there is no question of blood. But the garland that decorates Vishnu's body is as red as blood. When the demons achieve Sayujya Mukti and leave behind their sinful activities, they are blessed by Vishnu's garland, which is red like blood. After attaining Sayujya Mukti, the demons are sometimes promoted to the Vaikuntha world, where they receive the reward of the Lord's garland prasada. Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada explains that the defect of the demonic mentality is expressed in this verse very clearly. Basically, all these verses in Srimad Bhagavatam are here to teach us that we are demons. Usually, the tendency in a human being, when we hear something bad, we think about everyone else but not ourselves. And when we hear something good, when Srila Prabhupada mentions pure devotee, we usually mean that he probably means me. So, but in reality, whenever something bad is mentioned in the scriptures, we should clearly apply it to ourselves. We should understand that these demonic tendencies are not the tendencies of our neighbors, which are, of course, very clearly pronounced in them, and we can very clearly see them. But in reality, this is our own tendencies. I remember in the early days of preaching in Russia, I gave Bhagavad Gita to one friend of mine. And he read the whole Bhagavad Gita, and he gave it to me, and I asked, what did you like the most? He said, I like the most 16th chapter, the demonic and divine natures. And I said, what did you like the most about it? He said, because it very clearly described myself. So he understood this, and we have to understand the same kind of thing, because Krishna also explains in Bhagavad Gita that the influence of the lower modes makes us demons. Whenever Rajagun and Tamagun influence us, we become demons and Rakshasas. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that there are three types of human beings. And Srila Prabhupada, in fact, in this purport says that demons are ordinary human beings. Sometimes people think that demons are somebody with horns and clothes. And ideally, he has to have pointed ears also. Not necessarily so. You may have quite normal ears and still be a demon. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that there are three kinds of human beings according to the predominant mode of material nature or guna, which influences you. And you may be Sura or Daiva, and this is only if Sattva guna is prominent in your life. You can be asura or demon if you're rajasic by nature, and who is not. And you can become rakshasa if the tamagun is very much prominent in your life. So basically, you can even choose who you want to be. But Lord Krishna explains that in the 15th chapter, that our nature or svabhava, and the acquired nature, is the result of our actions, previous action in our life. And by the predominant association or attachment to a particular mode of nature, we acquire the nature in this life. And in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where the tree of material world is described, it is described as the secondary fruits of this tree. We perform our actions in this world, and according to the actions, we acquire certain svabhava in this life. And this is nothing but the result of our fruit of our actions in previous life. And it can be either asura sampat, or demonic fruit of this tree of our karma, or it can be daiva sampat, or sattvic, or divine fruit of this tree. So basically, our nature in this life is more or less set according to the previous actions which we did. And the asuric mentality or the attachment to certain modes of nature or certain gunas of material nature is described here is that when you are asura or when you are rajasic by nature, you feel yourself as a competitor to God. It's very difficult for you to accept the supremacy of Lord Vishnu. In Vishnu Purana it is described that there are only two kinds of living entities, the suras and asuras. And Vishnu Bhakta suras smritaha. Vishnu Bhaktas, they are suras. And asuras tadviparya. Vishnu Purana does not even want to describe asuras in great details. They said something which is opposite to Vishnu Bhakta. If you don't have the devotion, natural devotion, which is there in the heart. Actually, the devotion, the bhakti is there in the heart. It is the natural tendency of a human being to accept some superior authority. We are a small, tiny, dependent being. We have this tendency to accept the authority of the Supreme Lord. But at the same time, there is another nature which is more or less imposed upon us by the modes of Rajagun and Sattvagun. Oh, sorry, not Sattvagun, but Rajagun and Tamagun. And this Rajagun and Tamagun nature makes us competitors, makes us rebels. We don't want to accept the Lord. We want to be independent. I'm on my own. I know better. Who is he to tell me what I should do and what I shouldn't do? That's basically the mentality in everyone. Like there was this very famous Indian so-called philosopher, or Krishnamurti. For 40 years he has been teaching a very nice philosophy which is so pleasing to the heart of every conditioned living entity. You don't need a guru. Yesterday I also met with one person and he said, why do you need a guru? Your mind can be your guru. You don't need a guru. Why should you have a guru? Why? Because there is a tendency within us, we want to reject the higher authority. And we have to be very clear about this tendency. We should not underestimate this tendency. We are rebels. We are more or less God's competitors. And we, you know. We do want to occupy his position. And if we neglect this tendency within our heart, or if we forget about this tendency may manifest in a very surprising or unexpected ways for ourselves. Therefore, the scriptures are very vivid and very forceful when they describe this demonic mentality. And we have to understand that it's there, it's myself. The little Hiranyakashipu, or maybe not so little, maybe quite a normal size Hiranyakashipu lives within our heart. It's quite possible. Because the pride is there. And the lust is there. The greed is there. The anger is there. All these tendencies are there, and these tendencies are demonic. And this is Hiranyakashipus which are living within our heart. And oftentimes, direct our activities in this world and push us in a certain direction. which we may not even want, but somehow or other we are being pushed from inside. So, in this verse, Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada first of all describes that, you know, that demons are, you know, they're fond of sucking blood. This is the first tendency which is there. And in fact, when Lord Krishna describes the demoniac nature, he says, because it's interesting, when he starts describing demoniac nature in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he describes that demons are very proud. And he tells this to Arjuna. And Arjuna, being a devotee, immediately applies it to himself. He says, demons are harsh. Demons, they are very cruel. And immediately Arjuna thinks, that's about me. I'm here, I'm a warrior, I'm supposed to kill all these people, so I'm a demon. And he becomes very morose. And Krishna sees this. And Krishna starts pacifying him. He says, no, no, don't worry about this. So what Krishna is about to tell us also in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that it's not the action itself which classifies or which categorizes somebody as a demon or as a devotee, but our attitude towards action, or attitude primarily towards scriptures. When he sees that Arjuna doesn't understand really what he wants to say, that he is, you know, he's supposed to be a warrior, he's supposed to kill other people, so he immediately gives another definition of demonic nature, which is also very important for us to understand. He says that primarily and the most important functional definition of demonic nature, by which we can understand whether we are demons or devotees, is that whether we follow the scriptures or not. And if we follow the scriptures, if at least despite these tendencies which are there within our heart, we try to follow the scriptures, we accept the authority of the scriptures, then, you know, we can be more or less peaceful. And Krishna himself says to Arjuna, Masuchaha, don't worry, you are not a demon. Even though you're killing, and killing or murdering people is normally not a very, you know, praiseworthy activity. It's something which usually people think as demonic. But because he is doing it as his duty, he is a devotee. This is the first definition of devotion. We have to accept the supreme authority or the authority of the Supreme Lord as Shabda Brahman. Shabda Brahman, or the words of the Supreme Lord, are on the same level as the Lord himself. And if we accept Shabda Brahman, Pravritircha, Nivritircha, he says that demons don't know. They don't care. They don't care about Pravriti or the rules, and they don't know anything about Nivriti or regulations or prohibitions of the scriptures. And therefore they are demons. Therefore, this demonic tendency are not curbed. The Shastras are there to curb our demonic tendencies. And if we try to follow strictly Shastras, and therefore this land of Bharatavarsha is so glorious, it's only because even though the people with demonic tendencies are also being born here, but still Shastra has been followed for centuries and millenniums in this land, and Shastra is so highly respected, and therefore all these tendencies are reversed. And our conditioned nature, which makes us demons, turns into devotional nature. And ultimately, the natural tendency to love God manifests within our heart. And another interesting feature of this verse, which is describing this demonic nature, is how Prabhupada explains that demons, even though they're demons, if they're really good demons, if they're really first-class demons. The problem with us is that we're not even good demons. We're not good enough demons. Here Srila Prabhupada says that if the demons are really good, if they're really first-class, they're forced to think about the Lord all the time because of their demonic spirit. And basically it's manifested here by Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu being chivalrous. He's a very chivalrous demon. He says, you know, I will show to this Vishnu. And by doing so, he gets benefit. Ultimately, Prabhupada explains that demons, because of their demonic mentality or because of their demonic nature, they become so averse to the Supreme Lord that they are forced to think about him unfavorably. And this unfavorable mode of meditation in the Supreme Lord is actually saving grace. In the Shastras, there is a very interesting classification of different methods of spiritual advancement. Because there are different ways how you can spiritually advance. And Shastras give so many different methods. You know, you can follow this vow, or you can do this vrata, or to do this ritual. But ultimately, there is a very interesting judgment as far as the power of the particular method recommended in the Shastras, which is also described in the Shastras itself. It is said that there are three balas, or three kinds of strands, which is invested in each and every method of spiritual advancement. One is called, or not necessarily methods of spiritual advancement, or when you judge somebody's practice, then there are three criteria by which you can judge how powerful his practice is. One is called Pramata Bal, which means the strength of your own practice, so to speak. How expert you are in practicing it, how much you are absorbed in this particular way of spiritual advancement or in this particular sadhana. Another one is Prameya Bal. Another one is Sadhana Bal, or the specific strengths of the method itself. Because there are different ways or different gradations. Some methods are most forceful and some methods are weaker, so to speak. And the third one is called Prameya Bal. And Prameya Bal literally means the strength or Bal, the force which is invested in the object of our spiritual advancement. In other words, when we meditate upon the Lord, and this is actually, this criteria is used by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Laghu Bhagavatamritam when he is proving that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He is doing it in a very interesting way. He gives very many examples saying that meditation upon Lord Krishna is so powerful not because of our own strengths, because we are weak, especially when this Kali Yuga is concerned. You know, we cannot do much as far as our meditation is concerned. Maybe for, you know, 5 seconds we can meditate upon something which is pleasing to our senses. And then immediately we become our mind switches to something else. So, as far as meditation is concerned, it's not that strong. As far as sadhana bal, this is the sadhana bal. As far as the pramata bal, our own strengths, we don't have so much hope. But Srila Rupa Goswami says that Lord Krishna, his particular form, is so amazingly powerful that when you meditate on this particular form of Lord Krishna, because of this power, of this Prameya Bal, of the object of the meditation, this effect is so strong. And he gives a very interesting example, particularly very much relevant to this verse. He quotes from Vishnu Purana, and in Vishnu Purana there is a conversation between Maitreya Muni and Parashara Muni. And Maitreya Muni is asking a very interesting question of Parashara Muni. He asks, my dear sir, can you please explain to me why Hiranyakashipu didn't get liberation, even though the Lord himself killed him? Why Ravana didn't get liberation, even though he saw Lord Ram just in front of his eyes? And it is said, if you remember the Lord, at the moment of death, you go to the Lord. And why Shishupal got liberation? What is the difference between these three cases? Why Hiranyakashipu didn't get liberation? Why Ravana didn't get liberation? But why Shishupal got liberation? And Parashara Muni gives a brilliant explanation of this peculiar fact. He explains that Hiranyakashipu was too passionate. He says he was too passionate, and he knew that Nrisimhadev is somebody not very ordinary. You know, and ultimately, it's difficult to think that Nrisimhadev is something ordinary. You know, here is the Supreme Lord, comes in the most unusual and most extraordinary form in front of you. So it was very difficult for Hiranyakashipu to think that he's somebody ordinary. So he didn't have this fault. But because he was too passionate, you know, he was too busy, and he was, you know, too agitated, he couldn't meditate upon him. Even while being killed by Nrisimhadev, he was thinking about somebody else. Basically, that's what he wants to say. You know, Nrisimhadev is killing you, but you don't care about this. You're thinking about something else. This is what may happen. His meditation was not so strong, even though he thought that something unusual is going on. But, you know, he was very passionate at that moment, and he, you know, he was, most probably, he was thinking how great I am, you know. Here is this beast which is trying to kill me, and I am, you know, resisting him. So he didn't achieve much because he was not meditating on the Supreme Lord, but because the Supreme Lord himself killed him, he didn't go to hell. His hatred towards the Supreme Lord qualified him to go to hell. But because the Lord was kind enough to kill him, he didn't go to hell. Instead, he was born in a great opulence. He was born as Rakshasa, but this was a very special Rakshasa, Ravana. And Ravana was very powerful. He got a lot of good karma by being killed by Lord Nrisimhadev. He got beauty. Ravana was very beautiful. You know, we only have one head, and we are ready to look in the mirror for a long time how beautiful we are. Ravana had 10 heads, and he was looking in the mirror for much longer time because he had to look in each and every head, face of himself. And he was very beautiful, no doubt about it. He was very powerful. He was very rich, extremely rich. Much richer than anyone else, you know. He had all this golden city, and he had a lot of other pious credits. For a long time, he was running on this pious credit. He also was very knowledgeable. When he was chanting Vedic mantras, you know, it was so perfect that even demigods, they couldn't believe their ears. Agnidev was so enchanted by his chanting of Vedic mantras that he just was there, mesmerized. And in the meantime, Ravana kidnapped his wife, Svaha. So that was his way of enchanting demigods and kidnapping demons, their wives. So in any case, he was born as Ravana, but again, even though Lord Ram himself killed Ravana, he didn't get liberation. So the question is why? And the answer which is given by Parashara Muni is that when Lord Ramachandra was killing Ravana, Ravana thought, oh, he is just an ordinary human being. He is nobody. He was too lusty to accept that this is the Supreme Lord. This competitive spirit was still very strong even at the moment of his death. So again, the same story repeated itself. He didn't get the ultimate benefit of being killed by the Lord himself, but he got a lot of good karma, and he was born as the son of King Chedi. And he was born as Shishupal, and again, he was born as a very powerful person. Actually, he was not born very beautiful, but he was born with a very special features. It is described in Mahabharata that Shishupal was born with four hands. This is the result of being killed by Lord Ram himself. He was born with four hands and three eyes. And when the mother, who happened to be Lord Krishna's aunt, saw this Shishupal, she was horrified. She thought, this is something really genetically very abnormal, born to me. So they wanted to throw this little baby to the forest. And then at that moment, the voice from the sky pronounced very clearly that don't do it. He will be a great warrior, and he will be killed by somebody who, by putting him on his laps, will make his hands and extra eye fall down. So don't worry, he will be normal, but you know, after some time, and you will be able to see who will be his killer. And you know, so many people would come, and everyone wanted to see this four-handed child, and you know, and the aunt would, the Krishna's aunt, the mother of Shishupal, would put the child on the laps of all the guests, and nothing happened until Krishna and Balaram came to see this child, and she put the child on the laps of Krishna, and immediately when he put the child, she put the child on the laps of Krishna, his extra hands and extra eye fell down. And she started praying to Lord Krishna. Please don't kill him. Please don't kill him. Please promise to me that you would not kill him. And Lord Krishna says, I will not kill him for the time being. That's what he said. Unless and until he offends me 100 times. So in this way, Shishupal was born. And Shishupal, from the very beginning, he knew, Krishna is the one who will kill me. And he was always remembering about Lord Krishna. And because he was remembering particularly Lord Krishna and Lord Krishna's pastimes and his form, Rupa Goswami explains that this fact that he was remembering Lord Krishna and he was chanting his names all the time, all the time. This is actually, in fact, Shishupal was so fortunate that the first sound which he pronounced, when we pronounce different sounds, we usually say Papa, Mama, or something like this. He said Krishna. This was the first thing which he said. So much hatred he had within his heart. So, but because he was always chanting the Lord's holy name, and because the form of the Lord was so forcefully within his mind, and because this form was always there, he couldn't stop meditating upon the Lord. And Rupa Goswami says that this is the proof that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Because any other forms of the Lord are not as enchanting. Any other forms of the Lord, the meditation upon any other form of the Lord is not as powerful as the meditation upon the form of the Lord Krishna, of Lord Krishna. And he says, look, Shishupal was totally purified. Shishupal was so much purified that he understood and realized that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. Ravana didn't understand this. Hiranyakashipu, as we see from this verse, didn't really understand this. He says, I will kill this Vishnu. Shishupal knew Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He was quite enlightened demon. Still the hatred was there. But then it is also described by Parashara Muni what happened with him at the moment of death. At the moment of death, when Lord Krishna sent this Sudarshana Chakra towards Shishupal, the bright glow of this Sudarshana Chakra was so attractive to Shishupal that Shishupal thought, maybe I should surrender to Krishna. Because, after all, he is the Supreme Lord. And at this particular moment, when this glow of Sudarshana Chakra ultimately attracted mind of Shishupal, Shishupal got completely purified. All his sins were vanished at this particular moment, and he got the ultimate liberation and returned to his original position as Jai. So this is specifically is there in Laghu Bhagavatamritam as a proof that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. No one else, as the object of meditation, is so forceful. No one else, as the object of meditation, can purify us as much as Krishna. And if we just try to meditate upon Krishna, even though we are lousy meditators, let's let's be honest about it. You know, our mind is not very steady when it comes to meditation. Even though, you know, the meditation itself is not recommended process for this age. But still, if we try to apply... our mind to meditation upon Lord Krishna, if we try to see his beautiful form, and if we chant his holy name, which is the most powerful method given to us to Srila Prabhupada, then there is no problem with us. We can be totally, completely sure that the highest destination is there for us. If we just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, then Krishna will force himself within our mind at the moment of death. Even though we may be reluctant and we may try to think about something else, Krishna will force himself, will force us to think about him. If we try to do it, because he is the Supreme Lord, we will not be able to withdraw our mind from the meditation upon Lord Krishna, because this is the primary benediction for every one of us. And this benediction is given to us by Srila Prabhupada. He gave us this glorious method of spiritual advancement. And he wants us to change the whole earth. You know, as I said, the definition of the demon, it's somebody who is not clean, who doesn't speak truth, who is proud, but first and foremost, if somebody who rejects the scriptures. And Srila Prabhupada, he gave us these beautiful books, because today is the first day of the marathon, and I have to say just at least a few words about this. He gave us these books, and these books is his meditation upon Krishna. And every page, we can see how he meditates upon the Lord, how he is attached to the Lord, how the Lord is there within his heart, and how he pours out his love towards Lord Krishna in these books. And anyone who reads this book, anyone who touches this book, can become a pure devotee. There is no doubt about it. I will tell you a little story at the end, how these books are powerful, and how Srila Prabhupada is powerful. It's amazing. There is one devotee in Russia. His name is Brahmananda Puri Prabhu, and he's very amazing person, really amazing person. He's the one who printed probably at least single-handedly, without any money, he printed 10 million of Prabhupada's books. He started with nothing, with zero. He didn't have a penny, and just by his endeavor and his enthusiasm and his faith in Srila Prabhupada, he printed all these books, and all the devotees distributed these books ultimately. And now he wants to print Chinese books. And and now he is, of course, also very much instrumental in building this big temple in Moscow. So he told me his story, how he became a devotee. He didn't know anything about, you know, anything spiritual. He was an atheist, and he was somewhere in a village in Armenia in the mountains. You know, and he just, you know, he had the remotest understanding of what is going on in the world. He didn't have any spiritual inclinations whatsoever. So what happened to him, once his friend came in a truck, you know, he booked a truck, and, you know, the truck brought something. Not even friend, just some truck driver came to this village. And he was sitting in the mountains. He came to this truck driver, and the truck driver was smoking. And he was smoking at that time. So he, you know, he had to get something from the truck driver's cabin. And he went there. And somehow or other, there was a little book, Ishapanishad, by Srila Prabhupada, which was sitting there on the driver's seat. And he picked up this book, he touched this book, and he turned it on the back cover, and he saw Prabhupada's picture. And his immediate reaction, he just saw Prabhupada's picture. And this is a true story, you know, it's not imagination. Immediately, he spat up his cigarette, and he kneeled down, he bowed down to Srila Prabhupada.
When he saw this picture, he was so impressed. He says, I never thought that there are such human beings at this time and age. And instinctively, even though he didn't have anything to do with any religion, instinctively he bowed down to Srila Prabhupada. Immediately he accepted his as his life and soul and his authority, and he surrendered his life to Srila Prabhupada and his mission right at this spot. He read this book on the same day. Somehow or other, he get it from the driver. Driver said, I don't know what this book is doing. Somebody gave it to me, and I'm not going to read it. I don't read books at all. So he begged to get this book from this driver, and driver happily gave this book to him. He read it on the same day. He told his wife, from now on, we don't eat any meat, and no milk and no butter, because this is how he understood that what they should do. You know, for 3 years, his family, his wife and little children didn't eat any milk and any butter because this was animal product. And he said, "This is, you cannot eat this." Before he met with the devotees, to his great surprise, he found out that he can eat some butter. His wife says, "That was the best day in my life." You know, but the point is that, you know, he just touched the book. He just saw Prabhupada's picture. And he read the book. He couldn't understand anything in the book. He only understood that he shouldn't eat meat. This is the only, you know, conclusion which he immediately understood. Otherwise, he didn't understand much. And of course, he understood that he should chant the holy name. This is the power of the scriptures. This is what Prabhupada gave to us. And this is what he wants us to do, because he wants this world from being a demonic place where everyone is more or less a demon, following his lower nature, his rebellious, lustful nature, to be turned into a devotee. And there is no doubt about it, it's possible. This whole world can be turned into Vaikuntha, and everyone will be a devotee if everyone will somehow or other get a chance to read the books of Srila Prabhupada. And this is what we all are supposed to do here. This is what we are doing here. This is our humble tribute to Srila Prabhupada. We are practicing what he told us to practice, and we are trying to spread it as much as possible to other people. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Shall I finish now? It's already 9 o'clock. Anyway. There is some questions I can answer, otherwise we can also finish it. Yeah. I'm not so good in remembering. There's many amazing stories in this regard. I remember one story. One devotee told me. He was distributing books in Moscow last marathon. And it's very dark in December in Moscow. You know, around 3 o'clock it's already dark. It's a dark time of the year. And he was distributing it in near metro station, so it was little light, but it still was dark. And one lady was passing by, and he approached her and offered her to take the book. And she started chastising him. She started really, she get very angry. She said, "What this nonsense book you're trying to, you know, push upon me. I'm not going to get this book. These old books are nonsense. You would do much better if you would distribute Srila Prabhupada's books." She saw that he was distributing something else, but she said, "The only books which is worthy of being distributed is Srila Prabhupada's books, so you should do this instead." So he was very enthusiastic when he got this instruction from this nice lady. So
anyway. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada Smaravan ki. Jai. Gaura Premanandi.